Hello and welcome to FPL Happy Hour, episode 1 of season 4, and we're live! I haven't said that in ages. With myself, Sham, otherwise known as FPL 2 Guys 1 Cup on Twitter, or the midget from Team South goalie.
And I'm Rob, or FPL Panda, or that's about it. I didn't get selected for Team South.
No. How are you, Rob? It's been a very long time.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, it's been a while. We struggled a bit to get the content going, sort of at times last season, with all of the cancellations and COVID and all of that. I think it became a bit hard around Christmas time to sort of keep a roll going. So we didn't know what was going on half the time.
Consistent.
Yeah, it's been good to sort of come back fresh. The last week's been really hectic with building up towards the Friday deadline. For me, but yeah, it's good to just sort of sit back and chat FPL rather than make thousands of spreadsheets and set up competitions for people and everything. So yeah, it's good to be back.
Nice. Well, so one of the things, oh, there's my mic gone. One of the things that we realized from last year was just kind of the consistency outside of the COVID stuff. Both of us had personal stuff to deal with and work commitments and that, and we're finding it really difficult to kind of be consistent. So one of the things we're doing this year is just going to be streaming once a week, and that's just going to be a live stream turned into a podcast. So we're aiming to do a live stream either on a Monday or Tuesday, but it's no set time every week, but usually it'll be on a Tuesday at around 7 or 8 o'clock. But we'll tweet that out closer to the time in terms of when we are planning to do it.
None of us are playing Tuesday nights in Europe, so.
No, yeah, yeah. And we've got a slightly different agenda as well. It's not going to be today's agenda because it's pre-season. So today's is kind of just set for pre-season, and I'll talk you through today's agenda shortly. But going forward, our agenda is going to be kind of half FPL and half just general football chat. So it's going to be about an hour, and we do half an hour of our FPL teams, any hot topics that are around. So for example, for game week 2 for next week, it might be, should we switch from Kane to Haaland, for example, or things like that. It is kind of what will be on the hot topic. We'll be choosing our watch list like we did last year, so like ones to watch. And then the other half is going to be about general football chat, so talking a bit about my team, which is West Ham, and Rob's team, which is Man United. Anything going on in the club, anything outside of FPL. Transfers are still until the end of August, so we'll be talking a bit about that. So a little bit different, but that is our plan. For today, though, we are going to be firstly going through firstly, we're going to be talking about what we've learned from pre-season. So kind of 10 minutes on that, anything that we've learned from there, our ones to watch. So we picked out a couple of players that we both like. We'll then talk a bit, 10 minutes on West Ham and United, what we like or don't like coming into the beginning of the season. And then 10 minutes on other teams. Spurs have done a lot of signings, for example, this year, what we think that they might be doing. Chelsea haven't hardly signed anyone. So what do we think Chelsea's going to happen? And then we'll go through our not locked game week 1 squads, and then a Q&A. So if anyone's got any questions, we'll answer them afterwards. So yeah, that's a quick, we've got a few people in the chat as well, Rob. So we've got Forever QPR, Evening Gents, and FPL Glasto. Well, this is a nice surprise. Nice to have you back. And then my friend Brian says evening, and our trusted James is yes, the boys. So evening. Yeah, it's good to have you guys in the chat. So yeah, anything else you want to say, Rob, before we, I guess, start with what we've learned from preseason?
No, let's just crack on. Yeah, I think you basically said said everything.
Yeah, I guess if you are not subscribed and you're watching live, please subscribe and like and comment and share and all of that stuff. It helps us grow, so that we'll really appreciate that. Let's then talk about what we've learned in pre-season. And I guess the best thing is what we're going to do is look at the top six clubs and just kind of do a few lines on if there's anything that we've learned from an FPL point of view or otherwise from those top six clubs and what they are. And then outside of those top six, once we've done them, just a couple of bits on any other teams that are, could be of note for FPL. So I guess let's start with City. Rob, have you learned anything from City for pre-season wise?
I mean, with City, it's hard to learn anything from them pre-season because of the way that they're set up and how Guardiola rotates his sides anyway. But I think we know they're the team to beat this year. They're the champions. It did go all the way last year. But like, they're a lot like the signings they've made, they're stronger. I think the only worry maybe is maybe at the back with Laporte being injured. But like, they've signed the best striker in the world, haven't they? It's not a good thing for defenses of other teams. I think we're going to see them absolutely destroy some teams this season, as they did in the past. And like, if you look at last year, where they had no recognised real number nine striker. I mean, they had Jesus there, but he played a lot of games out wide on the right. KDB kind of played in a sort of a false nine role with Foden sometimes, and it's scary. I think, like, if you look at City sort of 3-4 years ago when Aguero was sort of in his pomp, that's what we're getting. But with a big number nine instead of a little number 10.
Yeah, so for me, I've learned a couple of things from pre-season. The first thing that I've learned is that I don't think that we can trust any Man City midfielders at the moment. I don't think there's one midfielder. I think there's too much, going to be too much rotation in there. Initially, I was looking at Grealish. Then we looked at Mahrez. Grealish and Mahrez both, I think Grealish came off and then Mahrez came off. I think they might have both come off at 60 minutes on the weekend. I'm not comfortable going with any Man City midfielders. I think the other thing is a lot of people were switching from Haaland to Kane after the Community Shield and that horrendous miss. Fuck knows how he missed that. But he got 1.5 XG against Liverpool, which shows me he's going to be hogging up a lot of the XG for Man City, and he will be converting those chances. He is a world-class striker. And he's getting into the opportunities to score. It's just about finding him. So I don't think that's changed my mind on Haaland. Whilst he's not in my squad, he wasn't in my squad before the Community Shield. So that kind of hasn't changed anything for me. That's kind of City. Okay, let's go on to Liverpool. Anything that you've learned from pre-season or Liverpool?
I think they're very much the same Liverpool, except now I think they've got an extra dimension in their attack with Darwin Nunez up front. I think they will start a lot of games with Firmino up front, just because the way that he can sort of switch out with the likes of Diaz and Salah to allow them to come inside and stuff. Especially at the sort of in the first few weeks of the season. I'm not saying Darwin Nunez isn't going to be a good asset at some point in this season. I just don't think at the start of the season is the time to jump on him. Funnily enough, he was very disappointing in a lot of the pre-season up until, is it their last pre-season game? Middle of last week?
Four goals.
Where he just went mental. But yeah, I still think Salah's the main man. There is, will he be still value? I think as long as Nunez isn't in the side, then I think his price is still great value. But I think when Nunez starts creeping in, that could be then the time to move off of him, and he's then another asset that you can use to go into the Liverpool attack. But I'm seeing a lot of teams with Salah, Diaz, or Trent, Robbo, or Trent and Robbo. I don't think you can get Salah, Trent, and Robbo and have the balance in the rest of your team. So, yeah, obviously Diaz is probably the best value for money in that team, as long as he continues that form he showed last year.
Yeah, see, I disagree a bit. I actually think Robbo's a better asset from than Diaz, and that's what I've learned from the preseason personally. That Robbo's been quite threatening. Diaz has been really quiet in preseason. So that's why I'm starting with Robbo over Diaz. I think the other thing I've learned is Salah was really quiet over the weekend, yet he still got a goal and an assist, or you know, an assist for the for that first goal. So he would have got the equivalent of 11 or 12 FPL points on that game.
And he was
So
quiet.
yeah, right. I also think that Nunez is an option from game week one because he may not start against Fulham, but I'll
Oh,
take
he'll
half an
play.
hour against
Yeah, he'll
Fulham.
play.
So I think I don't hate squads with Nunez in, to be fair. So yeah, I think that's kind of what I've learned. Liverpool, Chelsea. Let's move on. Chelsea. What have we learned? We've learned that sounds like Raheem Sterling is probably their saving grace, I guess. They haven't made any. Have they made any signings other than Sterling? I don't think so, have they?
Koulibaly, big
Koulibaly,
centre
yeah.
back from Napoli. I think there's question marks over him. His injury record, sort of over the past 3 or 4 years, isn't great. I mean, there was times over the past couple of summers that he was linked with United to come in, and I think the injury record for him was something that concerned us. I'm just wondering how many games they're going to get with Thiago Silva and Koulibaly this season. I don't think it will be a lot,
Yeah.
because of injuries and the strain of the season, etc. Especially once we move into move into September. I think next midweek is the only midweek till the World Cup that the teams playing in Europe don't play in midweek. I think after next week,
Oh, wow.
that's it. Because the League Cup has been moved forward. Obviously the Champions League, Europa League, the Conference League, all being squeezed into about a 6 week period, all of their group stages. And I think Chelsea are gonna really suffer with this because they're very weak at the back. I mean, they've got a great sort of back, we'll say back five, because you'll probably be Koulibaly, Silva, Azpilicueta. It looks like he's staying now. Reece James, Chilwell. But then after that, I don't think they've got that depth there. Where and there's a lot of like they're going to struggle with pace against them. Like anyone pacey running at those three, like Azpilicueta, Koulibaly, and Silva. Anyone running with pace or in behind them, then they're not gonna catch up. So it's made me very wary of where I'm going, like with Chelsea assets. And then going forward, I'm not sure without a striker there. As you mentioned, Sterling's the sort of the forward signing. Do they need a striker? I think they probably do. I don't think. I think Kai Havertz is a great player, but I'm not sure he's a number nine, Chelsea number nine sort of player. If you look at the players they've
No,
had in the past.
I echo your thoughts on that. It makes it, I guess, makes me concerned of having Reece James. That's why I haven't got Reece James in my side, because I'm concerned about the defence. And I think it's a wait and see, especially with the, you know, potentially early wild card. That's why I'm kind of wait and see on Chelsea. Let's move on to Spurs then, a side that have made loads of changes in terms of transfers rather than changes, and in depth as well. And they're looking really, really strong. What's your thoughts on Spurs?
I think out of
anything you've learned in pre-season,
probably out of the whole league, they're the side that's strengthened the most. Conte sort of been quite ruthless in the transfer market, knew where he wanted to strengthen, has gone out there and done it. Eze Bissouma, I think it was a great signing, in sort of that holding midfield role. It just gives their attack so much more freedom. And it allows the wing-backs, like having him and Højbjerg there, just allow the wing-backs just to like get forward as much as possible. And I mean, it's the question mark though, with the depth that they've got, who are the starting wing-backs going to be for Spurs? Because there's so many options now. I think there's about six potential players that all that have got filled sort of two roles in that side. And yeah, you don't know who they're going to be. And we'll obviously see more and have a more of an idea Saturday lunchtime when they play Southampton. Of who the first choice wing backs are, but then even then, like we get into the stage of the season where there's the European games, because of the amount of running those wing backs are going to have to do, because it's a Conte side, there's going to be a rotation there as well. Like you can't see the likes of, well, Perisic isn't going to play 90 minutes week in, week out. Twice a week, week in, week out. Doherty's not going to do that. Reguilon, Emerson Royale, Sessegnon, like so many of them. Like none of them are going to be doing that week in, week out. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I think it kind of lessens their fullbacks as options. I know Perisic, when he came in, when the game was released, and he was in a lot of teams, and that's drops quite significantly now. Unless he suddenly gets deployed as a winger rather than a wing back.
Yeah, I've started with Perisic just simply because I think he will start the first game against Southampton. So I think it's worth a shot. I think he is a 15 point waiting to happen, or potentially a 1 point, similar to Reece James, but I don't trust Chelsea's defence, as I said. So, yep, that's kind of Spurs. Well, let's move on to Arsenal then. The team looking one of the best, if not the best, in the league pre-season wise, in, you know, in friendlies. You know, I know we don't want to take friendlies, we should take friendlies with a pinch of salt, but just the way that they're playing and their cohesion, Jesus scoring a ridiculous amount of goals, Saka playing well, Martinelli, all of them kind of really doing well. And I think that I've learned from Arsenal this season, in pre-season, is you definitely have to have Jesus regardless of his ownership. I think the highest that I've ever seen, 70%, I think he was at the moment. And I think you probably want another attacker potentially to go in there. And you know, when I go to my draft, you'll kind of see I'm flirting between Martinelli as the second option. But yeah, I think Arsenal have got the best start as well, and you definitely want to have at least two of those assets, is kind of my thoughts. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, my similar thoughts attacking wise of Arsenal. My concerns with them are defensively still. I don't think they've strengthened enough at the back to warrant sort of paying the sort of money. Like Ramsdale's 5 million. Why would I go Ramsdale? I can pay 0.5 more and have Edison or Alisson. Like that's and be guaranteed a lot more clean sheets, etc. Or I can pay, spend 4.5 less and spend 4.5 million on a Raya or Sanchez and pick up the save points and the odd clean sheet, and probably a similar amount of clean sheets that Arsenal are going to get. So defensively, I'm not too sure on them. But attacking wise, it's, but again, it's knowing who's going to start. I think, Jesus is going to start every game. I think it would be like having an £8 million asset playing for a top side as their number nine starting every week is like, it's a must have. And that's what is shown in its ownership. Saka as well, I think, is nailed in that side. Odegaard will probably be first choice in that number 10 role, which he performed really well, especially in the second half of last season. And I think he's also just been, had the captain's armband a few weeks as well, which kind of, that sort of cements him even more. It's that left side that I'm not too sure of. Like Martinelli and Smith Rowe shared it a lot last season. It's where it's picking the, sort of the right side of the, like the right player for that left side position, because you preferably want the player that starts every week. Although, as we've said before with other assets, we know with this new five sub rule that we're going to see a lot more changes sort of around the hour mark to bring on fresh legs. And yeah, like Smith Rowe to Martinelli or vice versa is going to be one of those sort of substitutes we'd see. And yeah, it's no harm having one of them and them not starting. You know, they're probably going to get 20 minutes to half an hour as long as they're on the bench.
Right, and then the final team in the top six to talk about is United. And Rob, I'll let you deal with this one.
Well, we're going to obviously talk a bit more about United, but we'll just talk about the pre-season. Quietly impressed.
I guess let's just talk from an FPL point of view what we've learned, if there's, in terms of FPL options, and then we'll talk about outside of FPL once in the
quietly impressed with them in pre-season. I think they've taken to the play style that Erik ten Hag has brought in quite well. I think the assets that stand out are Diogo Dalot at 4.5 million. He'll be playing at right back during pre-season, getting forward a lot, sort of linking up with Sancho a lot. I think he got a couple of assists as well through pre-season. So, yeah, I really like him at 4.5 million. Out of the rest of them, I think Sancho maybe paying a bit too much, maybe 0.5 too much. But Rashford definitely interests me because of his price point, and we know that at times in the season he'll be playing sort of up front rather than as a winger, and when the ball gets played sort of down the right hand side, he comes right in. And almost is on the sort of towards the penalty spot. He comes in like that far inside. So I think, I like him at his value. Martial interests me, but I think it's sort of very much dependent on the future of Cristiano Ronaldo. Personally, I think, I kind of do want that potential move maybe to happen, because I think Martial has got a point to prove, and during pre-season he showed it. But yeah, until we know, and I don't think we're going to know until deadline day, whether Martial is going to be an option or not. Because he'll start on Sunday, but that doesn't guarantee anything moving forward, because he'll only start on Sunday because Ronaldo's had 45 minutes of football in the last 3 months.
Okie doke. So that's kind of the top six covered. And the reason why we focus on the top six, and I I think this important point to make is the FPL pricing has meant that it is a lot more affordable to have the top players in your side. You could fill all 11 of your starting 11 from the top six, and most will have at least 9. So my advice is, if you've got 7 or 8, you know, 8 maybe is okay, but if you've got 7 or less, you need to try and put some more of those top six. And, you know, they're top six for the reason, because they're the best sides. And if FPL was allowing you to have the better players in, you should take the opportunity to do so. I guess outside of the top six, Rob, are there any like one or two players that you've seen that is worth potential, you know, potentially putting in?
I mean, we've seen in the sort of first, over the sort of first squad, three or four games, the first three or four games, we've got Villa have some great fixtures. The likes of Watkins, Ings, and Leon Bailey, definitely ones to watch. All have performed fairly well in pre-season. Matty Cash as well, and Luca Dean. They're the ones sort of that really stand out elsewhere. If you like looking at the fixtures coming up, etc. I didn't watch enough of pre-season from a lot of the sort of mid-table to low-end sides to really get a feel for much of them. Leicester concern me at the moment massively with the sale of Kasper Schmeichel today. So I'm not sure.
Has he gone now?
Yeah, he's got a medical in Nice tomorrow.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So, I mean, yeah, Danny Ward, 4 million. But it looks like Wesley Fofana is also on his way out. A defence minus Fofana and Schmeichel. I don't think I'm going, even at 4 million, I'm not starting Danny Ward in any games, am I? I'd rather have a rotating, pay the extra 0.5 and have a rotating pairing if that's where I'm going. I mean, if you're paying 5 or 5.5 million, I think you get Danny Ward in as your backup sub keeper, but that's all he is. You'd never play him because you're investing 5.5 in a goalkeeper. You play them week in, week out.
Okie doke, right. So let's now move on to our next subject, and that is our watch list. So let's spend a few minutes on players that we've chosen, Rob, two of yours and two of mine. We've got the stats up from last season, but we're not going to talk through the stats because it's kind of irrelevant. For example, Martial, he didn't play a lot of last season, so the stats are kind of relevant. But we're just going to talk about why we put them as a watch list and what are we waiting for to see. I'll go first. So I've picked Martial and Bailey for my two. And Bailey's had a really good pre-season. He hadn't really figured much a lot of last season due to an injury. But they spent quite a lot of money on him. I think it was like 17, 18 million from what I remember spending that. He had an XG in the German league of 0.5 XGI per game. That's kind of goals and assists. So, you know, good showing the fact that he can deliver and score and assist. And pre-season, he's done really, really well. I think one of the comments that Jared made at the beginning, like maybe I think about a week or so ago before his last game, saying that he's pushing for that starting 11 and wants to start. So I think he'll be a really good asset to watch. Whether or not you want to start with him or not, that's up to you. But they've got a really good set of three or four games. I think they've got three out of four games are really favourable. So I think it's worth starting him. The obvious problem with him, well, you've got two main problems. The first is there's no guarantee that he starts. But I think if he is starting, he's a really good option. He's been playing, he's in that kind of wide forward position, but he's been playing in a kind of front two when they're attacking, apparently, from what I've read from Villa fans. The other concern is, if he isn't starting, where do you go from 5 million? There's not a lot of other 5 million options. So that's the only other concern. But for me, I think it's worth starting him. I'm going to be starting him in my side as we stand now. He is. So that's kind of Leon Bailey. Martial, you spoke earlier about United and how good you've been looking. And I think the only caveat with this is Ronaldo. I think for at least the first three or four games, Martial will start, but you never know if, you know, when this Ronaldo issue is going to get sorted. If he comes on, it's kind of a transfer waiting to happen from a Martial point of view coming out. So it is a wait and watch and see. I don't think I'll be starting him personally, but I will be seeing if he, what happens with the Ronaldo situation. And if Ronaldo ends up making a move, a 7 million United forward that looks in a very attacking side. This United side to me look like they can score 2, 3, 4 goals, but they will also concede one or two a game, right?
So, or three or four.
yeah, that's why Dalot for me isn't a great option, because I think you'll concede a lot, but I think you'll also score quite a lot as well. So yeah, those are the kind of two watch players for me. Whether or not you want to start them both, it's up to you, but I'd definitely keep them on your radar.
Cool. Right. So my two, every other year we see Fulham come up and we all tell ourselves, no, not again, not Alexander Mitrovic. But they're a different side now a much different side now than they were 2 years ago under Scott Parker. This Fulham side last year in the Championship just blew teams away, because the way that they set up plays into Mitrovic's strengths very much so. Whereas 2 years ago under Scott Parker, it really didn't play into Mitrovic's strengths. And he cut a very frustrated figure for much of the season because... He struggled to fit into the way they played. I think his price, 6.5, like Martial, would be better value if he's starting every game. But Mitrovic, I think, will start every game he is available. He's probably a good option to have. At certain points in the season, and I think with Fulham's start to the season, first few weeks are not great for Fulham. Like Liverpool at home, Wolves away, Brentford at home, Arsenal away. Like the first 7 game weeks are pretty awful. But then game week 8, they've got Forest. That means you've got sort of plenty of time to sort of absorb them. I wouldn't like go at the end of that sort of run of 7 games if he's only got one goal in those 7 games. I won't ditch him off because they are tougher fixtures. But if he's getting the chances or making sort of the right moves to get towards having those chances, then he could definitely be an option if you were going for like a game week 8 wild card. He could be someone that you could bring in and then rotate out for someone else. Like my other player that I have on the watch list, and that is Brian Mbeumo. Brentford, towards the end of last season, playing a lot better football. The acquisition of Christian Eriksen in January, I think, just gave him that creativity coming from the midfield that sparked Mbeumo and Tony sort of into life a bit more. We saw them sort of getting a lot more returns wise than they were before Christmas. Now, what interests me with him, I mean, it's more the news that I read yesterday It looks like they're going to be they're in the running to sign Mikael Damsgaard from Sampdoria, who we will remember from the Euros last year as the young number 10 for Denmark. Well, he wasn't the number 10. He played in that role when after the incident with Christian Eriksen, and he was brilliant. Brilliant little creative player. Brilliant on set piece, etc. And I think that would then free up Mbeumo to sort of become a real partner to Tony up front. So I really like him at 6 million. I mean, you're saving. You could go to Tony and have seven, and but he's 1 million more. I think you're saving 1 million for just a slightly sort of lesser asset. I don't think is it. There's like an 1 million gap in the potential returns in with their price. I think it's probably maybe a 0.5. So I think you're getting a bit of value out of him. And with Brentford's sort of opening fixtures, yeah, like Leicester away, Man United at home, tough. Well, Leicester away might not be a tough fixture at the weekend. Then obviously Man United at home. Don't know whether that's a tough fixture either. But then Fulham, Everton, Palace, Leeds, Southampton, all decent fixtures, and that takes you quite nicely into, again, like I said, a game week 8 wild card, which seems to be what a lot of people are looking towards at the moment, around sort of game week 8. Obviously, with the enforced wild card slash overhaul, if that's what you want to call it, in game week 16, or between game week 16 and 17 for the World Cup. So yeah, I think it, with that early wild card, it does make it easier to take some gambles on assets like Mbeumo, on Bailey, maybe on Mitrovic, whoever, on Rashford, Martial, all of these players, because it allows, like, you don't have to go, oh, once I get that player, I've got him for 15 weeks. Like, you've got this player, the most at worst you've got them for is sort of 6 or 7 weeks, because you can afford to wildcard that much earlier than in previous seasons.
Indeed. Right. So let's move away now for a little bit away from FPL chat. Let's talk about our own teams, West Ham and Man United, and how we think, not necessarily from an FPL point of view, but just overall football, how we think they've done in pre-season, or just how we think they're looking like for the beginning of the season, and any FPL assets we can mention as well. I'll talk about West Ham first. So we've had, I would say, let's transfers wise. So we signed Agüero, who's a centre back from Rennes, for 25 million. Never been injured, never had any big injury record.
She said
And
that
in
now.
pre-season, he's now been injured until December. So that's such a great signing for us, and then within a few weeks of signing him, he gets injured until December. So that wasn't a great start. It now means we were going to sell Issa Diop, but now we can't because Dawson's also carrying a bit of a knock. Ogbonna has just come back from a long-term injury, so it looks like Diop is probably going to start the beginning of the season with Diop and Zuma, and I think against City will probably play five at the back. So I imagine Cresswell will probably play left centre back, and then Johnson will play on the left as a left wing back, and Sofal as right wing back. We also signed Flynn Downes, who's kind of in seen as the same sort of player as Declan Rice, and I think we've signed him as when we get rid of Declan Rice, because he will probably go next summer. As a kind of on, a fill-in for him. So I think he's kind of his understudy. Incidentally, across Europe, Declan Rice had a 91% pass completion rate last season, which is second in Europe, and Flynn Downes got 93%, which was first. So same sort of mould as Declan Rice. We then got our striker Scamacca from Sasasulu. Looks to be a decent player. Don't know too much about him, but from the YouTube clips, he looks amazing. Just like anyone else looks amazing on the YouTube clips. So I don't know.
Amazing on YouTube.
I know. I mean, I looked amazing on my YouTube clips for game week 39. So, yeah, let's see how he does. And I think we're looking to sign another 2 to 3 more players. So pre-season wise, I don't think we've had the best pre-season, but it's really difficult to tell from the people that I know that have gone to see the matches have kind of said we look sluggish, not on it, lack of creativity. I don't think we got a single win. I think maybe one win I think we got. I think that was against Ipswich, possibly. The rest were all draws, so draw against Luton, draw against Lawns, and then we lost to Rangers as well. So a bit of a disappointing preseason. Bowen hasn't scored in preseason. He hasn't been looking sharp from what I've read. I've watched a bit of the preseason. He didn't look on it. So I'm a bit concerned about him at the beginning of this season. But I think from a FPL point of view, West Ham are a wait and see. Definitely, I wouldn't be investing in them at the moment. We haven't got the grace fixtures wrong anyway for the first kind of 4 or 5 games. So they are a wait and see. And obviously, I'm a West Ham season ticket holder, so I'll be going to see them every week at home. So I'll be kind of reporting back on this podcast and kind of relaying my thoughts on if that's changed. And I hope it does change. But at the moment, I'm not the most optimistic going into the beginning of the season based on what I've seen and the transfer we've made so far.
Yeah, I mean, West Ham, because they have, I mean, after they obviously play City at the weekend, but then sort of game weeks 2, 3, 4, there's some decent fixtures there. I mean, Forest away, Brighton home, yeah. Villa away. Is it because of the bad, like poor pre-season that it's sort of turned us off, like the likes of Bowen, Antonio, Soufal, like the other, I mean, just like from a fantasy point of view, is that why? Because like normally, I mean...
So I haven't seen anything in pre-season personally that makes me think, yeah, go and buy these assets. There hasn't been that team performance that's made me think we're on form, we're playing well like we did last season. I have not seen that. You know, I know preseason's all about fitness and stuff like that, but I haven't seen anything that's made me think you should go out and buy them. I guess we'll see after the City game. You know, we gave City a game, you know, last game of last season, 2-2. We were 2-0 up, we drew 2-2. So I'll be able to tell after the first game whether or not we're on it and whether or not we're, you know, we've got potential. Because those three fixtures are decent, but then after that you've got Spurs and Chelsea.
Yeah.
So two tough games after that three run of fixtures. But if you're wildcarding in 5... you know, potentially you could bring in a Bowen in game week 2, but I won't know until that City game and whether or not we're playing well.
Do we think that the exploits of last season with that like great run in Europe and then players like, well, Jarrod Bowen, then going into the England side, playing well into the summer. I think, when was the last England game? Was it late June? Or mid-June, the last England game. Do you think that might be something to do with why we're getting sort of the sluggish performances from him in particular?
Maybe it's possible. I don't know. It could just be in pre-season they don't want to exert themselves too much. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of sides,
we'll know a lot after the City game.
Yeah, for a lot of sides, I mean, you can tell they know it's a friendly sometimes, sort of very lackluster at times. But yeah, they could be a completely different
kind of
side,
just to give an example. We just give an example about pre-season. You know, United beat Liverpool 4-0, right? But then they played City the other day, and that was not what you would class a pre-season friendly. They went at it at each other. If I was watching that game and I didn't know it was a preseason friendly, I definitely wouldn't have thought it was a preseason friendly, right? Mm. They went at it with each other, so it's difficult to tell, I think.
Yeah.
Let's hear about a little bit about United.
As I said earlier, I think Ten Hag's come in, and you can see. We could see in that Liverpool game at times, the first pre-season game, there's been a lot of work done on the training pitch about when you, like, first of all, winning the ball, winning it quickly. Like, they're pressing so high up the pitch, and really pressing, like seeing Martial actually run to go and get a ball off someone and put someone under pressure. It was shocking. And that's why I said earlier that I think he's got a bit of a point to prove. But yeah, not only doing that, but then once they got the ball, moving it quickly and with some sort of purpose, whereas before there hasn't been that purpose there. I think that's only going to get better when with like the likes of Eriksen coming in, someone that can assist with that transition, because he's not. I don't think in this United side he's been brought in to play as a number 10. Bruno's a number 10. I think he's been brought in to play in a pivot. Like, so when he was playing under Conte at Inter, he was very much playing in this pivot where, yeah, the DM wins the ball or the centre-backs win the ball. They give it to him and he moves it forward and then gives it to the 10 or the 9. Or out wide. But he can also, we've seen Bruno playing that sort of role as well at times. So I think between him and Bruno, this is going to be this little rotation on in that sort of number six role that, I mean, in the past, we've seen players like Paul Pogba asked to play this role and he hasn't been able to, because whether it's just his attitude or whatever. He just hasn't been able to perform. Whereas I think Eriksen is able to do that. The only problem is with that is you can only play one holding midfielder. And at the moment, we don't have a holding midfielder that can play by themselves in that role. I think with Fred and McSauce or McTominay, I think they need a partner to be able to play that role. And I think this is why this deal for Frankie de Jong, I think, is so vital to how Ten Hag wants to set the side up for the season. I think it'll be the sort of deal that I think is the difference between top four and not top four, because I think he's a good enough DM to be able to play that role by himself, and by doing that it just frees up so much more attacking options. I think then the other thing to talk about is Ronaldo. Now I never thought I'd get to the day where I said I don't think Ronaldo should be at in the team anymore, not at the club anymore, but in the team anymore. I think that his style of play just does not suit the side. Now, I can't say it's bad for the side. I've seen people, like some people saying, Ronaldo wasn't there, United would have finished top four last year. Ronaldo wasn't there and scored the 17 goals that he did. We could have been fighting relegation last season. We wouldn't have made it out of the groups in the Champions League, etc. So I don't really buy that view on it. And we don't know how the season would have panned out if he wasn't there. What would have happened? But on the other hand, if Ten Hag has got the bottle and can keep him but not play him, and use him as sort of like someone that you bring on like half an hour to go, either to sort of shore up the up front, maybe. I'm not sure if that would work for Ronaldo because he doesn't press, like historically doesn't press. We saw it a few times last year. But if we're chasing a game and we need a goal, I don't think there's any player in the world you'd rather bring on if you needed a goal. We're 1-0 down, or it's 1-1 with 20 minutes to go. Like, is there anyone apart from Messi, Haaland, that you'd want to bring on?
Nope.
So, are you going to Solskjaer?
Solskjaer? I'll take Solskjaer 1-0 down. Yeah, it's a tough one. I think for the betterment of the side, is that even a word? I think it is time to let Ronaldo move on. But then where's he going to go? Who's going to take him? We've seen Bayern turn around and say, no, it doesn't fit our ethos to sign a player £500,000 a week. We've seen Real dip their head in and go, no thanks. We see Atletico dip their head in, no thanks. PSG haven't really sort of made any moves towards it. Other than sort of these sort of clubs, I can't see anyone unless he goes back to Italy. Right. But yeah, again, will they? I don't know. So yeah, until that's sorted out, I'm not too sure attacking wise, but I think yeah, the big turning point could be if we can get this Frankie De Jong line deal over the line, and I think it's close. The fact that his agent and he have in the last few weeks said he doesn't want to leave. He has to say that if he wants £17 million he's owed. If he wants that £17 million, he has to want to stay at the club. He needs Barca to want to sell him. And at some point, they're going to have to come out and put him up for sale because they can't register anyone. And it's like they were saying weeks ago how they, like Xavi was saying how he's likely to be played as a centre-half. They went and signed Koundé as a centre-half. So they've got Piqué and Koundé as their sort of first choice centre halves. Like, where does Frankie de Jong fit into that Barca side? He doesn't. So they'll sell him. They have to. Otherwise, none of these new players, there's going to be a lot of disappointed Barca players sitting there. Well, they won't be disappointed if they're collecting €500,000 every week. But they're not going to be playing any football because they're not going to be registered to the league. And in a World Cup year, the top players need to be playing, especially when you're not getting sort of a warm up into the World Cup. Your warm up is going to be your club games. So yeah, these players need to be playing. No, like, can you imagine Poland going into the World Cup if Lewandowski hasn't played for 6 weeks since the last Poland game? Like, yeah. It would be
struggle.
It's the same for a lot of these players. Frankie de Jong is definitely one of them. So I think I really hope we can get it done in the next couple of weeks.
Okie doke. We've run a bit over time with regards to talking about other clubs. So we'll just move on to our Game Week 1 drafts, Rob, for this week. So let's now switch back to FPL and see what our definitely not locked sides are looking like. Do you want to bring up mine first and I'll kind of talk through it?
Yep, there you go.
Right, so this is kind of what I've got so far. And bear in mind, I've got 1.5 in the bank. There's a couple of positions that I'm not sure about, not locked in for. So that's why I've kind of left that money in the bank. So I've got Ramsdale in goal. with Alexander-Arnold, Robertson, Cancelo and Perisic in defence. In midfield, I've got Salah, Bailey, Neto, Rashford, Kane and Jesus. So nine of my starting 11 from the top six. We've then got Ward, Andreas, Pereira, Nico Williams and Archer in the subs bench. I think we are now. Okay, so we cut out there. So for those that are watching live, Rob's laptop restarted. But yeah, as we were saying, Bournemouth look shit. I read something from Scott Parker's interview saying basically he's got no fit players or hardly any fit defenders. And so I think that gives a good opportunity for Bailey to score against this poor Bournemouth side. Also got Neto in there. I think, you know, Wolves aren't the most attacking side, but Neto playing in that front three, they look different compared to the usual Wolves. And I think really good opportunity for them to score. I really want Martinelli in there, but I'm just quite not sure where to fit him, to be honest with you. Do I take up Bailey or Neto? I'm really unsure. I like Rashford. I think it might be Rashford that comes out as potentially for Martinelli. And then I've got 2 million spare. What do I do with that 2 million? I don't know. Kane and Jesus are kind of the staples there. They're not going to be moving, I don't think. My plan is to move Kane to Haaland for game week two, because I think Kane can do really well against Southampton. So that's kind of my side at the moment. I'm still unsure on a few bits and pieces. I've got 1.5 in the bank, and I'm not quite sure where to spend it at the moment, because I'm quite happy with some of the players.
You sure about
any questions or Rob, do you want to
wreck your team? Ramsdale. No, Ramsdale. I mean, you said about having, you've got 1.5 in the bank, and you've got Ward there on your bench. Is it worth boosting up Ramsdale into an Edison?
No, because I want to be able to move freely to City assets if I want to. And I don't think Edison is worth the 0.5 from Ramsdale personally.
I mean, what free assets do you think you'd... I mean, Haaland would obviously be one, Cancelo's another. But we've already spoken about like the midfield, not being sure who's nailed, etc.
Yeah. You never know what might happen. So after game week one, a player might emerge and I can go Rashford to Foden or Mahrez.
Yeah.
Because I've got 1.5 in the bank at the moment.
It's a lot of money sitting in the bank, isn't it?
But where else can I improve?
Exactly.
I can't see. I don't see any other improvements. Maybe Edison is an improvement, but outside of that, I don't really see. The other option is I go Williams to a City defender, I could go Williams to a City defender, Walker.
Archer up to Mbeumo.
Yeah, possibly. But then who do you drop?
Well, you wouldn't game week one. You wouldn't need to.
Yeah, I don't like, you know, I don't like having like 6 million players on my bench.
I swear this goes...
especially when you've got...
This price goes up. It's a 6 million forward. It's not a 6 million defender or a 6 million goalkeeper. It's a 6 million forward.
I don't like having higher than the minimum on your bench. So I prefer 4.5 midfielders, 4 million defenders and 4.5 strikers on my bench.
I mean, what we do know from this season is that your benches aren't going to be used a lot. So the likeliness of even of Andreas being needed, like a player's going to have to literally be out of the squad, match day squad, to not have a chance of featuring, because teams are going to have 7 substitutes. One of them's going to be the goalkeeper. So there's 6 outfield players. 5 of them can get on the pitch. The likeliness that if your player is in the squad, he will feature on the pitch at some point because of the way that the subs work now. So it does mean that you can afford to go really weak on the bench this season, and as well with that early wild card, it means it's quite easy to rip up that starting 11 and change it at an earlier point than in other seasons where you might have wanted to have waited an extra sort of 3 or 4 game weeks. So I think it's very similar to my draft, which we'll have a look at. I think there's
right, let's look at yours.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9 out of 15 are the same. So here's my draft. So I've gone with a rotating pair of goalkeepers, Raya and Sanchez, to 4.5 million. And then I've got TAA Cancelo, like you. At the moment, I have got Reece James in my side. Despite what we've said about this Chelsea defence and not being too sure about it, what I am sure is of the attacking potential of Reece James. I'm not too worried about defensively. I think he'll pick up the points going forward instead. Then I've got Diogo Dalot. I've got Salah and Diaz from Liverpool. Leon Bailey and Neto as my other two midfielders. And then Kane and Jesus up front. At the moment, my bench has got Mbeumo, Andreas and Williams. So same as you with two of those three as well. It's 0.5 in the bank. It gives me some flexibility to make that Kane to Haaland move in game week 2. I think, yeah, the concerns at the moment are probably Dalot and Bailey on whether he starts. But then, yeah, and Mbeumo away to Leicester, I don't think it's a bad... I mean, if Bailey isn't in the squad, I mean, if he's on the bench, he's going to come on. If Bailey, for some reason, doesn't appear, then, yeah, Mbeumo comes in and playing against the Leicester side. But I'd say, who's the Planet FPL correspondent in today's... was it today's podcast or yesterday's podcast from Planet FPL? Their correspondent for Aston Villa said he thinks there's a 60% chance of them starting. James then said that it was a lot. He thinks it's a lot more of Bailey starting, which I think is enough for me to sort of have him there in my side. Neto, I think, is, playing up front for Wolves. They're not a team that last year sort of screamed goals. But he was also injured for a long period last season.
Rob, do you want to just check that we're still live?
I don't think we are, but we're going to record the sound. So I'm not fucking out of YouTube. I've had enough of YouTube. I think Neto, good option. Kane, Jesus. I think attacking wise, this week, I think, if City weren't playing West Ham away and they were playing sort of a mid-table to lower end of the table side this weekend, I think it would be very much a coin flip between Kane and Haaland. I think just that the fixture for City just swings it Kane's way. It's quite refreshing being sitting here talking about premium strikers. Like, when have we done that in the last 2 seasons?
No, exactly. In terms of having that dilemma, captaincy, are you on Salah then?
Yeah, I'll be on Salah this weekend. I'm not confident enough in Kane at home to Southampton to go against him with Salah at Fulham. I think there'll be some people that go for it. I think, well, those that don't own Salah are going to probably have the captaincy on Kane, aren't they? If not, it'll be on Haaland. I did toy with the idea when in one of my drafts I had no Salah and I toyed with the idea of captaining TAA in game week one, but I'm pretty
yeah,
set
I'll probably
on
be
having
on Salah as well.
Salah this week. I think it's the first sort of 5-6 weeks. It's fairly sort of simple between, you know, like you look at the Liverpool and City fixtures. It's like game week one, Liverpool against Fulham, Salah. Game week two, City against Bournemouth, Haaland. Game week three, City against Newcastle, Haaland. And then, or you could even go Salah if you like. Salah at Old Trafford isn't a bad fixture. Then game week four, Liverpool at home to Bournemouth, Salah. Five, City at home to Forest, Haaland. It's just like it's quite a nice rotation of captaincy there. It doesn't have to be Haaland. I mean, De Bruyne, I think, is up there in the captaincy. As with Salah, it doesn't have to be Salah. I think Diaz could be a captaincy shout, or TAA, or maybe Darwin Nunez becomes a captaincy shout in one of those weeks. Yeah, so, I mean, those Bournemouth fixtures are just, they're the ones that you want to be targeting, especially in the first two or three weeks before the transfer window closes. And if they don't manage to sign any defenders, then yeah, it could be, they could be the whipping boys for the season, really.
Yep. Okay, dope. Well, that's our first stream done and dusted. We got anything that you want to quickly add before we wrap up, Rob?
Not really. Yeah, been busy with spreadsheets for the guys at Scout, and then yeah, my mini league. The deadline for entries to my mini league is tomorrow or Wednesday evening. So yeah, if you want to come and enter that, plenty of little side competitions. Then yeah, sign up form can be found on my pinned tweet. So yeah, that's what I'm going to be busy with the next couple of days, as well as still 6 game weeks to go of Chapman FPL. So yeah, it's been still non-stop all summer, it feels like. And the last couple of weeks have been just crazy with ramping up towards FPL and all of the extra little bits I'm doing at the moment. So yeah, it's keeping me busy. I should remember that I should book annual leave in the week before the FPL deadline, just so that I can keep on top of everything.
Right. Okay. It's been good streaming with you again, Rob. For everyone that's listened, thanks for tuning in. You can find us on Twitter, FPL_happyhour. We're also on a number of podcasts, Spotify, etc. And our YouTube channel is FPL Happy Hour. Please like, subscribe and share, and all your retweets are appreciated. Have a fantastic game week one. For those that are going to Fest on Friday, I will see you there. Take care.
Cheers, guys.